Hall of Fame broadcaster Marty Brenneman here, and he's the best storyteller in the game, and it's time to sit back, relax, and have some laughs. Welcome to the mayor's office, and here's your host, Sean Casey.
Boom! Coming back in, Chase. What's going on, brother?
Not much. I'm fired up. Dude, this is crazy. This person who we're having on today, our careers were literally in parallel, and I might ask him if he remembers this, but the very first piece I cut as a producer at ESPN, Rich Eisen went to your camp, and the piece was on Ken Griffey Jr. playing with these two kids who were coming up in the outfield, and it was. And so I have followed this guy's career like so violently my whole life. I know everything about him because I love these guys because I got to see them all of a sudden become big leaguers. So take us through who we got. I'm so fired up.
Well, it's funny. This kid, I still look at him as a kid too. Like, he was like my little brother. But we're all in our 40s, which is unbelievable. Seventh overall pick by the Reds, 1998. One of the best prospects coming up in that time. Third in the Rookie of the Year in 2002. Came out the gates ripping. Over 300. Bunch of bombs, doubles. Everything he hit seemed like to be a rocket. Played 12 years in the big leagues. With a lot of great players, a lot of great managers too. I played with him 2002 to 2005, but also we did a lot of things when he was still in the minor leagues at spring training and stuff like that. Just one of my favorite teammates of all time. One of the best dudes. Also hails from Lexington, Kentucky, which he takes great pride in. Also a great fantasy football player. I like to slap him around every once in a while. So let's bring in my man, Austin Kearns. What's up, Kearnsy?
What's going on, guys?
How you doing, brother? How's everything going, man?
You can, on the introduction for me, you can mix in a defending fantasy football champion this year, too.
That's right, fantasy football, which is Big Jack. And, we're allowed to say it's a nice little, when you win this fantasy football league, you're like, let's get it. You know what I mean? Let's get it. And Kearnsy, Kearnsy, let's talk about the fantasy football league, dude, because we've been in it for so long now, and there's so many good dudes in it, and like, it is funny how we're all pretty serious when football season comes, because to win that league, you actually have to pay attention, like you have to lock in.
For sure, man. I remember the first year y'all made me do it. I'd never even done it. And I was like, how much am I writing this check for? And so, like, from then on, it's like, man, you got to be dialed in once football season comes around, because it's all business.
Wait, Case, who's in the league with you guys? Who is it that you can name?
It's me, Dunner, Booney, Harnish, Greg Vaughn. I think Hal Morris is Hal Morris. Ryan Zimmerman was in it for a while. I think he bailed. Eric Hinsky was in it. Who else? Steve Avery. Yeah, Denny Nagel, Steve Avery. We got some great dudes, man.
All star team.
It's such a fun time. Like, we have just so many good guys, and we've been doing it since 1999. Well, Kearnsy wasn't there yet, but 99. I think Kearnsy, you came what, like early, like 02, 03 probably.
Yeah, you are, my rookie year. It was like you guys are like, yeah, you're in, and I'm like, in what? And then you're like, yeah, this is how much it costs, and I was like, man, can I get a partner? Can somebody go half with me on this?
We're like, no, you're in straight up, dude. That was so fun. I used to, when you and what was great was when you and Dunner. And Buzz, Corky Moore, a lot of different guys. You guys were all in the minor leagues together, but we kind of all hit it off at spring training and stuff like that. And remember we used to go over, you and Dunner had that place, and me and Dimitri would come over and watch wrestling with you guys. And
Dude, so we were in the minor leagues, and, I mean, everybody there was a wrestling guy, like all of our guys in the minor leagues, and then you guys that were in the big leagues. So word got around that we were ordering WrestleMania at our place. And like, you come up, Gravy comes up, Dimitri comes up. Hey, you guys are getting WrestleMania. Can we come? And I'm like, what? Like, big leaguers are going to come over and watch WrestleMania with us? And so we went and got a bunch of, like, I think we ordered takeout from Don Pablo's and got a bunch of food. And then all you guys show up, and dude, I probably never even told you this, but like, I snuck away in the bathroom at one point. I called my dad. I was like, Sean Casey's here. Dimitri Young's here. They all love wrestling just as much as we do.
But they made you guys pay, right? The pro guys made you guys pay.
No, they didn't make us pay. I think we might have left and forgot to help out with the bill.
Yeah, you guys picked us up on down the road somewhere.
Sure. Yeah, we picked them up when they got to the show. We figured it just because they were in the minors, they could pick up Don Pablo's one night.
You guys left, and me and Dunner are like, hey, don't worry, guys, we got it. We paid for it.
You know, Kersey and Dunner weren't the typical like minor leaguers. They were two very confident dudes that were always like, hey, you know, they would kind of call us out. So I'm like, dude, we can't even haze these guys. They're calling us out. They're not even in the big leagues yet. You know what I mean? It's unbelievable. Oh my God. Kersey, what do you remember most, bro, when you look back at, like, especially that time in the minor leagues? Cause I, you know, for me having the experience with you, like, we were kind of waiting for you and Dunner to get there. It was like, man, these two horses are coming, you know, they're going to be here soon. Then you guys came and obviously made a huge impact in that organization and both had great big league careers. But, like, what are some of the times you remember, you know, with Dunner in the minor leagues that, you know, when you look back on, you're like, man, that was awesome.
There were so many awesome things about the minor leagues, and we just had a great group of core guys that came up together. And then you mix in Buddy Bell was our farm director.
And
Buddy didn't care if you were a first round pick or an undrafted free agent. Like, he treated everybody the same. And if you didn't do things the right way, like, Buddy was going to rip you up one side and down the other. it didn't matter. And then we had Freddie Benavides, who's the bench coach in Cincy. He was our manager in Dayton. And, you know, one thing Freddie always talked about was, you know, it's easy to get to the big leagues. It's harder to stay there. And one thing he told me and Dunner that year in Dayton, he's like, you guys are going to play every single day. He goes, I'm not going to baby you. If you're missing a game, you better be in the hospital. Yeah, because he said the only way you're going to figure this out and figure out how to play this game and is to be out there every single day. And so, you know, I always remembered that. And then, you know, along the way, like Jim Hickman was our hitting coordinator, and Hickey was awesome, just old school and kept it so simple, but just a joy to be around. And then you mix him, it was him and Jose Cardinal was our outfielder.
Dude, tell us about Cardinal, man.
Oh, dude. I mean, one of my favorites. I actually got him to sign a jersey for me because he was absolutely one of my favorites that I ever had. Just old school, didn't say much, but when he did say something, you listen. But then just had this great personality, man. Like, he was kind of sneaky funny, and then once we got comfortable and you could give it right back to him, and it just made it a lot of fun.
Dude, I used to love that. One of the things I remember is your relationship with Cardinal, because you'd be like, and he'd be like, oh, Kersey, you're an asshole. You're the asshole. He would call you the asshole. Yeah.
Dunner, and
so, but
Dunner,
you, but you, yeah. You were with him in the minors, though.
Yeah, so he was, when I was in AA, he was our outfield base running guy. And so we were supposed to have early work one day, and I got out there like just as early work starting, and he just shooed me off. He said, go back inside. I said, what do you mean? He goes, no. He goes, you're not. He's like, you're not walking out here. You haven't stretched. You haven't done anything. He's like, get out of here. But Jose was great. Dunner used to always wear him out and used to tell him he talks like he's got an 82-pound tongue.
That's so great, man. Cardinal, he was such a beauty, and Dunner. Don't leave it to Dunner to pull that off. It's so great.
Right.
Dude, what? Tell me, take me back, because you have to tell the story, but I heard it secondhand. There was a huge brawl you guys got in one of those years. Gosh. I think you were in Dayton, but it was dangerous. I think Dunner might have taken two people out with one punch or something, but I can't.
Man,
what happened there?
So we were in Lansing, Michigan, and a guy hit a home run for Lansing, and our pitcher and catcher thought he was peeking at the signs. And the guy was – he ended up playing quarterback at LSU. They may have won a national title, or when they split, his name was Matt Mock. And so Matt worked out in Kentucky in the offseason, so I knew him a little bit. And so his next time up, our catcher, who at the time, like, we, you know, calls him out, like, as he's getting in the box. And we're like that, our catcher was kind of the last guy we thought would call anybody out. And so they drill him first pitch. And so as they drill him, you know, he starts barking, then our catcher pushes him. Well, then it's on in the first one. So we're sprinting in from the outfield. You know, we're, you know, trying to get our licks in. And I, like, at one point I turned around and I was squared up with their coach. and I just kind of like gave him one of those and went and jumped in the pile. But, so it took a while to calm down. So then eventually we come up to bat and, Brian Conley's our first guy up. And BC's hard-nosed, old school, and we're like, dude, they're throwing at the wrong guy. And so we're in the third base dugout, and so we're all like kind of pointing, picking out who we're going to get. So we look over in their dugout, and their whole bullpen had come to the dugout. And they're on the top step with baseballs.
What?
And so they throw at BC. They miss BC. BC charges. So as we're running out to the brawl to get in it, these dudes chuck baseballs at us as we're running out. All these guys from the bullpen. Yeah. So we run out. The thing I'll never forget is like this catcher tried to tackle Dunner as he's going out, like tried to come up the third baseline and tackle Adam.
Oh boy.
Adam just grabbed him and flipped him on his back. With like one punch, and it was over. and so then we jump in, get in the pile, man. The second one, it felt like there was 50 of their dudes out there in that second one. Like everywhere you looked, there's a white jersey, and you're getting clocked from behind by somebody. And so it took like probably 5 or 6 minutes for it to calm down, which doesn't seem like a long time, but when you're out there, that's an eternity. And I don't know, Scott Winchester was down there with us he was like on big league rehab.
Right.
And Scott Winchester's in the middle of the brawl. So we thought that was the coolest thing ever. We're like, dude, a big leaguer's down here fighting with us. We thought it was great.
That's awesome.
But anyway, long story short, I think it was like 12 or 13 people went to the hospital. And it was just, I mean, there was a lot of dudes that got hurt and took a beating, and it was a crazy one for sure.
Wow, dude. I still remember that to this day. And I'm like, I remember Kearnsy and Dunner talking about this brawl they had in A-ball where guys were going to the hospital. Like, you don't, usually you're in the big leagues, you're like, okay, you know, guys are grabbing each other. You might see a couple punches. No one goes to the hospital. So for 12 dudes to go to the hospital, I mean, that's was everybody fighting? Was it just, it was mayhem.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we had one of my roommates in A-ball that year. His name was Gene Altman.
Yeah.
And Gene is about as country as they come, from South Carolina. Well, he's a starting pitcher. He's in the stands charting. He's in street clothes. He came out of the stands onto the field and is at home plate throwing haymakers in a collared shirt, blue jeans, and cowboy boots on. Like, dude, just getting after
it. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Only in the minor leagues could you pull this off.
Yeah, and the umpires had no shot of stopping. Like, and that it was just, it ended when everybody got tired.
Right. Oh my gosh, dude, that is unbelievable. That is unbelievable. So Kearnsy, so you guys go through the minors. Obviously you and Dunner kind of, you know, make your way up fast. I want to go back really quick. Tell us about Dunner in the minors, because I always say, we had Dunner on a few months ago, and I always say when Dunner first came up, I'm like, I try to tell people, this guy can hit. Like, this guy's not a two. Like, when people think of Adam Dunn, you think, oh, 210 with 40 and 100. I'm like, no, no, no. When Adam Dunn first came up, this guy was a gap-to-gap, really a left-center hitter, could drive the ball out of the ballpark. And I don't know if it was because of Jim LaFever got a hold of him in the big leagues or what. But
you said it.
But I'm like, this is not the same guy that came up. What do you remember about him in the minors and kind of like he became a pull hitter, and he really wasn't, was he?
Yeah, man. We were together pretty much every step of the way. And he always hit for average. And, you know, you mix in the power, and like the year he got called up, when he ended up hitting like 50 plus homers on the year, like where he hit hit like 12 in the first month in Double A, then went to Triple A and hit 20, then came to the big leagues and hit 20 or something like that. Like,
right.
That was, it was just one of those things. Like, you just knew you were watching something that was different.
Yeah.
And I think because Adam was so talented, I think that's, you know, I'm sure it happens everywhere, but certain people want to put their stamp on him and say, oh, I got him there. I had him change right. this. And he's that guy that's hitting 300 and hitting 40 bombs. Like, there was always people wanting to put their stamp on him. And, you know, it's, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but he was always a high average guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Always a high average guy. Yeah. Wasn't just a home run guy. And he could fly. For you, you guys could both fly. For being as big as you guys are, like, I always loved, like, you know, when I always say, like, you didn't want to fight us because we had a Willie Mopena, Kearnsy, Dunner, even Griff was a monster. You know, we had like a football team. We had so many big guys, but so athletic. Like, you guys could all run, throw, everything like that. So when Kearnsy, when you go back to that group you kind of came up with, a lot of good dudes, but especially Dunner, I always feel like you guys were, like, you still are to this day great best of friends, and you guys kind of grew up together because you were both young, really out of high school. You know, that first year when you got to Cincinnati, and really in 2002, you kind of took us by storm. I mean, what worked for you when you first came up, and, like, what do you remember about, you know, that first year for you in Cincinnati?
Well, I think I got called up in the middle of when I was pretty hot, so that certainly helped. but honestly, man, like, you guys being around you guys in spring training and just feeling like there's a little bit of a, you know, comfort level. Not to say that, you know, I belong, but just like, hey, man, these are good dudes, and they go about things the right way. You know, you just got to show up and play hard, and just, you know, you'll have the respect of your teammates. So I think that was the biggest thing, was just the team, man. Cause like that was a good bunch of dudes that, you know, that first couple of years in Cincy, man, where we, you know, it was one of those deals, like, where everybody hangs out together, you know, when, even if you're away from the field, like, all the guys are together and got a lot of respect for each other.
Yeah, it's so funny. I almost feel like when my time in Cincy, like, I played on some other great teams, but nothing would compare to the camaraderie that we had on those teams. We did everything together. We did a lot of dinners together, lunches together, and all that stuff. Did you ever find that? You know, you went off and played with the Nats and the Indians and a couple other teams, Marlins, the Yanks. Did you ever find that same camaraderie, or did you find that was special in Cincinnati?
I think it was definitely more special in Cincinnati because it was more people where, you know, you find your little group you hang out with or whatever on and off the field at different places. But there was never the number of guys when I was playing with other teams that there was in Cincinnati.
Yeah. Yeah. What about Junior, man? It seemed like Junior kind of took you and Dunner under his wing. Like, what was so impressive about him? And, you know, what was some of the any advice that he might have given you that you kind of carried on throughout your career?
Well, Ken, I mean, he was a big – I feel like he's just a big kid at heart. Like, you know, he loved to have fun and laugh and joke. And that was – you know, I remember him and his dad both saying, like, if you can't laugh on the baseball field, then you shouldn't be out there because this game will chew you up and spit you out, basically. So Junior, man, like – you know, the talent was just off the charts and still maybe one of the coolest things, if not the coolest things I saw, was my second day in the big leagues. We were at home and we're playing Houston on a day game. And so Junior had the day off. And so we're in like a one run game in the seventh. And I go up to the clubhouse to get a new pair of batting gloves. And so as I'm coming back down, Junior's in the food room and he's like eating some nachos or something, cut off shirt, shorts on. So somebody comes up there and says, hey, Junior, if it's still a one run game, you're hitting in the pitcher spot, like leading off the next inning in the eighth. And he just like never breaks, like takes his bite. He's like, okay. So I go back down and we go out, we get three outs, come back in. Well, here he comes through the tunnel. This is at River or Synergy, Riverfront, whatever you want to call it. he comes through the tunnel, walks out on deck, goes up. I don't know. It might have been first pitch, but like oppo left center bomb. This is my second day in the big leagues, and I'm like, that's probably the coolest thing I've ever seen. Like, and then I think in 05 he hit, it was when he was having, you know, he was like 300 with 35 bombs, and August rolls around and he got hurt, and he never hit outside. Like, his BP every day was in the cage. Right. And he would just work in the cage and then just go out and hit and hit and hit. But, you know, probably the most memorable memory I have, and it's great because you all put it on MLB Network, but is when Dunner, when Sheffield about decapitated Dunner in left field. me and Junior probably laughed for two innings in the field. Like, I was crying, bent over, laughing so hard. And I couldn't even look at Ken, because when I would look over at him, I would just start it all over again. He'd have his glove over his mouth, and then I'd lose it again. Like, that was one of the funniest things I've ever been a part of on baseball.
Well, we were talking about that. Matter of fact, we had Chef on and Dunner, and they both remember it. Chef was like, "Yeah, man, I hit that ball." I said it looked like Dunner was playing in at third. It skipped. It was hit so freaking hard. It skipped off the grass, and it just ricocheted off his shoulder like he didn't even get a glove on it.
Hey, dude, it was like he like broke in for a step, and you see that, like, oh boy,
like, oh shit.
Yeah, and then it's like rocket off the collarbone, neck, and then like over to the wall. Like, it was so funny.
Oh my god, that's so great, man. That's so great, dude. I remember one time. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, we always joke, we're like, yeah, Lark, go for it. that ball was so low.
It was, man. That was people are like, what's the furthest, hardest ball you've ever seen? You know, home run. You think, oh, is it the home run? I go, no, should have been a single by Gary Sheffield, turned into a double, almost killed Adam Dunner's Dunn neck in left field. Oh my god. Dude, what about the story? I was thinking about this. What about the story? I remember we were in Wrigley one day and you used to love the Wrigley fans. Out there in right field, I remember one time they're getting on you and you're jiving back with them and stuff like that. And then one time there was a couple birds flying out there and the chant was unbelievable. Can you tell us about that chant from the Wrigley faithful out there in the bleachers?
Yeah, it was, you know, you get a lot of the "you suck" and all that and everywhere, but like when they come up with something good, like I'll acknowledge them and say, you know, that's good work there. So I was out in right field one day, and like these birds just keep flying around, and like I don't know if there's food somewhere, but like they will not get out of right field. So of course the right field chant starts up saying "shit on Kern, shit on Kern."
I remember when you came in and I was like, "Kernsy, are they chanting shit on Kerns out there?"
Oh yeah.
And you're like, "Yeah, they are."
Yeah, there was a couple of years later, I was hitting about like 170 or 180 maybe in May. And so I'm out in right field and they're just chanting my batting average the whole time. And I'm just like, "Man, there's nothing you can do about that one. You better just start playing better if you want to get them to stop that one."
Oh my god. What was the best place you like to play as a visiting player and why?
Wrigley.
Wrigley.
Wrigley, you know, I think most of it was because when I was growing up, I'd get home from school and you get home from school and turn WGN on and there'd be a day game on in Wrigley Field. And Andre Dawson was my favorite player growing up. And so I always enjoyed, you know, Wrigley Field, thought it was just, you know, just the whole setting is I think amazing, where it's, you know, just kind of right in the middle of a neighborhood and the bleachers and then people on the apartments. And so Wrigley was always my favorite place.
That was awesome, man. Going to Wrigley, like it was a party all the time, whether they were good or bad.
Yeah, like, it didn't matter.
Freaking party! It's freaking sold out. People are here to have some beers, sit up on the rooftops, do whatever. But I don't even know if they knew we were playing at times. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. They're just staying hydrated.
Yeah. Exactly, dude. Exactly. Oh my god. So Kernsy, for you, man, You get traded in 2006 to the Nationals. I remember we had dinner after one of the games. I was with the Pirates. I had just gotten traded to the Pirates, and I know for me it was like, you know, it was tough getting traded from Cincy because of all those good guys. I mean, I remember even seeing you and Dunner and those guys and Griff and in the dugout when I was at spring training when I was with the Pirates. I'm like, man, I really miss those guys. Like, not so much. I just miss those guys. And I know for you in 2006 when you got traded, I mean, we had dinner one night and you kind of had that same feeling. Like, what was that like for you when you got traded in 2006?
Well, it was, you know, it was tough because more so from a, you know, you'd been there through the years where you got your butt kicked in Cincinnati some. And so the year that I got traded at the break, I think we were a game or two out of first at the break. And we had lost like seven in a row going into the break where our bullpen was really, really struggled the last week. And so that for me, that was more of it, was that, you know, we're a game or two out of first place, feel like we're close to getting over that hump, and then getting traded to a team that's, you know, they were 20 games under 500 at the break. And so like that first week, like you're sitting there and I'm sitting there in the outfield and it's like, you keep peeking over at the scoreboard, you know, see what, you know, if they're winning in Cincinnati or whatever. But that, you know, I would say that's probably normal, you know, for everybody. And it was the first time I'd been traded. And I was fortunate being from Lexington, where I got to play in Dayton, Ohio, which is 2 hours away. I got to play in Chattanooga, which is like four and a half. And then Louisville's an hour. And then being in Cincinnati, like my parents, like, got to come to all kinds of games. So like, you know, I think in Cincinnati, I can probably count on one hand the number of games my dad missed. So I think like looking at it, it was more so like, I was just kind of disappointed. But then like after you kind of get your senses about you, like, man, I should be grateful that I got to play that close to home. And you know, my parents were able to come to as many games as they did.
Dude, your parents were like mainstays in Cincinnati. And like, they were just, obviously you can tell, just you're a wonderful dude. They were wonderful people.
My dad is like, was always the one that was like, didn't say much, just kind of let me go figure it out. Where my mom was the one that, hey, like, whatever you're doing, like, you better be putting forth your best effort, getting after it.
Yes.
You know, in that regard, she was, you know, she was from Youngstown, Ohio, you know, that, you know, parents worked in steel mill factories.
I was just saying,
like, just old school blue collar. Yeah. And that's how she raised me, you know, she raised me and kind of instilled those same beliefs and traits in me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. I just remember how great your parents were. And I always love that about you, your toughness to play every night. It's interesting what you said about Freddie Benavidez saying, you know, hey, you better be in the hospital to come out of this lineup. And I felt like, you know, you and Dunner kind of played that game that way. I always said that about Dunner too. Like, hey man, people will say that this guy doesn't like baseball. Go look at the back of his baseball card. Yeah. If you don't like baseball, you don't play 162 every single year. So I always admire that, you know, about you. And I'm sure, like I said, your mom being from Youngstown, those steel mills, those tough, you know, cause that's not far from Pittsburgh. That's, you know, that's 1 hour away. And there's a different breed of people, especially in that generation. Like, you know, I'm sure there wasn't too many hand-me-downs in the Kearns house growing up.
You know? And her mom was from Pittsburgh, and so her dad was from Youngstown. So like we had the mix of Pittsburgh and Youngstown together, where you know it's pretty hardcore.
Yeah, and that's why, dude, you're a Steeler fan, aren't you?
Yeah,
your sons are.
So my grandmother was a huge Steelers fan.
Right.
And so that's kind of where, like, I remember growing up and like Steeler football. And then as I got older, like become a teenager, it's like, man, I love the smash mouth, you know, old school, you know, the way the Steelers play, just kind of, you know, blue collar, hard nose. And so the same thing, like that's what my oldest son is, kind of became a Steelers fan. And so we try to get up there, you know, get to a game in Pittsburgh, or, you know, we'll go when they come to Cincinnati, go up there.
You got to let me know next time you guys come to the Berg, bro. I'd love to have you over to the house. And
for sure.
I love it, dude. I saw a picture of you guys walking across. I don't know if you're walking across the bridge or you know, when he was a little younger, had his Steeler jersey on. I remember, man, yeah. It's so cool to see Kearnsy here in Pittsburgh with his son, yeah, with a Steeler jersey.
Yeah, I think I got him a couple years ago for Christmas. We got him a tank top and it says Yenzer Mob.
Dude, did your mom have a little bit of a Yenzer accent?
She's got that northern, you know, she says tournament.
Yeah, tournament. You know, that's what I say, tournament. Yeah.
Right.
Tournament, yeah.
Yeah. That's so great, yeah, dude. She had some of that in her.
That's so great. What about what about your dad? How's he doing? Like, is he, you know, and do you get a chance to see him a lot?
Yeah, I mean, he lives in Lexington and we're just a few miles away. You know, he's slowed down a lot and you know, it's been a tough go, like, you know, obviously since my mom passed, yeah. But he, you know, he doesn't get out of the house too much. He's kind of just, he likes kicking it in his recliner and I'll just fill him in kind of on how the kids are doing. But like, you know, we get over there probably two or three times a week, just pop in, make sure, you know, see if he needs anything and you know, stuff like that. But, just trying to get him out to the ballpark a little more, trying to, yeah, you know, as you get older, you get set in your ways and don't want to do anything, but it is what it is.
He's like, Austin, just let me know how they're doing. I was like, no, Dad, get out of the chair, get in the car, yeah, and you're coming to the game.
Right, yeah. Let's make a little more of an effort.
Wow. Yeah, let's make a little more of an effort. I love it, dude.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
dude, when you went to Washington, Frank Robinson was the coach, who obviously was your manager, obviously one of the greatest players of all time, but also Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame, you know, mm-hmm, retired number there. Like, what was it like playing for Frank? And did you feel, you know, did you ever pick his brain on, you know, any of the things that kind of he went through when he was playing?
You know, Frank, you could always like feel his presence around whenever he stepped in a room or, you know, a clubhouse or whatever. But Frank, I think, you know, he's from the old school generation and that's what he wanted out of his players more than anything. And, I mean, I remember when, cause Felipe Lopez was in that trade too.
Yeah, and that's so, right. Ryan Wagner too, right?
Yes. And yeah, so there was a time, there was a game and Felipe, somebody hit, smoked one at him and he kind of played it to the side and the ball went in the outfield and Frank called time and went to the mound just so he could get in. Give Felipe an ass chewing. You know, wasted the visit just so he could go wear out his shortstop. But you know, stuff like that, man. I always like it's kind of the same way in Reds fantasy camp. Like when I'm around those guys that came before us, like I like to just sit there and listen. I like to listen to the stories and just listen to what they have to say because, you know, I just, you know, it just means a lot, and being around those older guys and just hearing their stories is really fun. But he, you know, Frank, when I first got traded there, I was kind of struggling hitting, and so I was working in the cage with him and Mitchell Page, our hitting coach, and so they're trying to get me to make a couple little adjustments, and I'm doing it in the cage. Like I can sit there and do it in flips or do it off the tee. And Frank's like, I don't understand why you can do it in the cage, but you can't do it in the game. And I finally turned around and I said, Frank, I said, man, this game was a lot easier for you than it is for the rest of them. I said, I promise you, I'm trying to do it in the game. It may not look like it, but I promise you I'm trying.
Yeah, you're like, hey, listen, Frank, no one has the numbers. You're one of five guys in the whole this game, 150 right, years has the numbers. It's not as easy as it is for guys like Frank Robinson.
We were playing in Colorado, and we had a game. We made like seven or eight errors. I mean, it was bad news bears. It was awful. And we come in the clubhouse after the game, and he walks in and puts his chair down and just sits down. Has the clubhouse guys close the doors, and he's like, nobody is leaving this place until everybody says something. Until what? Everybody, yeah. and I'd been there like 2 weeks. And so like, I'm still kind of feeling it out a little bit, but you had Frank, and then you had, Davey Lopes was on that staff too.
Oh, wow.
One of my favorites. Like yeah. Davey was awesome. So they start going around the room. Like what's wrong? What do we need to fix? And so one guy steps up. He's like, well, I think the problem is we don't have a leader. We need a leader on this team. And then somebody else steps forward and is like, I think we're just putting too much pressure on ourselves. We need to, relax a little bit. And so then, no, you couldn't see Davey Lopes, but Davey comes from around the corner and goes, are you fucking kidding me? Are you kidding me? You're in last place and you're talking to me about pressure and put too much pressure on yourself? You're 30 games under 500. And he goes, leader, be your own damn leader. He goes, pay me $3-4 million. I'll be your leader.
So great.
Oh yeah. Like you guys are in last place. What are you talking? There is no pressure.
Like, there is no pressure.
That's like my second week there. And I was just like, oh man, this is, obviously playing bad, but like my kind of guys with Frank and Davey.
Oh yeah. Old school. Do you remember what you said?
It got to the point where like, I didn't really say anything. I was just trying to like to stay out of it. Cause I'd just gotten there.
Right.
And it got about halfway around the room and then it started getting a little loud and then that kind of ended it. But I just remember like Alfonso Soriano was there. And so like every day after that, like before every game, like we'd be in the dugout getting ready to go and Sori would be like, pressure. Don't talk to me about pressure. Pressure. <good." laughs> But yeah, man, it was Davey and Frank were awesome.
Oh, that's great, dude. That's so great. Dude, when you look back, like at your career, cause dude, you kind of were one of those guys, you had a cannon of an arm. I look back at when you were playing right, dude, I'm like, man, when guys would round third, I'm like, oh, hell yeah. Kearns is going to freaking throw these guys out. You had a cannon, which I don't think is appreciated nowadays. I don't think guys throw too many guys out. I feel like when they do, they're like, oh, yeah, look at that arm. I feel like back when we played, more guys threw guys out from the outfield, and you were one that had an absolute cannon. You could run. You could hit for power, all that. And I think when I look back at your career, I'm like, man, you had a great career. You don't play 12 years in the big leagues without having a great career. But you played 161 in 2007. You played 150 in 2006. And then 120 in 2010. Do you look back at all and be like, man, I wish I was healthier? Like, does that bother you at all? Or no, you're just like, it is what it is.
It is what it is. I mean, I probably could have done some things a little different as far as not trying to play through some stuff, but
right,
that's just kind of always how I was and kind of was raised. And like, you need to be out there for your teammates. And I'm sure there was times that I was hurting us more than helping us, but like I just wanted to be on the field, man. And like I just know like being hurt and being on that DL was like one of the most miserable things ever. And like I just it was hard. It was hard for me like to even like sit on the bench and watch, because like you want to be out there so bad. And that was just it was so frustrating, but it's part of it.
Yeah, no, it's true though. It is amazing though the years that you got the games played, you put up some pretty impressive numbers, but I know too, dude, I was on the DL a ton too, and it was like it's tough, man. Play 162 games, especially where you played. You're playing the outfield, you're roaming, you're running, you're starting, you're stopping. It's just a different animal. And like, it's tough to stay healthy. That's what I mean. To even play, I played 11, 12 years, so did you. Like, to even play that long with the injuries that you have to endure and coming back from it, sometimes, those years I was hurt, I'm like, this is miserable. This is the most miserable you can be, because you feel like I'm on the sidelines of a battle. I can't do anything about it.
Right.
Yeah.
And so. I always, coming off the DL too, like I always, you wish you could kind of bottle it up, but like those first games back after coming off the DL was like, you had that joy and appreciation that you had as a kid, like where you're just having, you're so happy and having so much fun just to be back on the field.
Right.
And it's like, you know, it gets hard as you get older where it's a business and there's so many different things involved. But like coming back from the DL, like I always remember that feeling of like, man, this is just, it's so much fun. And just being out there to play with your buddies.
Yeah, it brings you back to that little kid in you comes back.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So great, dude. So when you leave Washington, you end up going to Cleveland. Do you have any good memories back being with Cleveland and playing on those teams?
Yeah, so we had some pretty good teams. You know, I was there for a half a year season and got traded and then re-signed and went back. But you know, getting to play with Grady Sizemore and Travis Hafner and Johnny Peralta and some of these guys and Shinsu Chu, you know, they were just extremely hard workers. And to me, they kind of seemed like that's how Cleveland, kind of how they were built from the front office down, is like they were kind of high character. They wanted, you know, they wanted that to be a big part of their organization. And so I always thought, like, when you got guys like Grady Sizemore and Shinsu Chu, who are great players, but the hardest workers on the team, like, when your best players are your hardest workers, that sets the tone where everything else can fall in place.
Yeah.
So I had a great time in Cleveland, and we actually we ended up living there in the off season because we got our middle son, Brady. The Cleveland Clinic has a school for autism. There. And so we got him in there where he could go to school so we stayed up there and got to experience a winter in Cleveland. So that was a lot of fun. Jeez.
Now you know why your mom was so tough. It's like the same winters in Youngstown. You know what I mean?
Dude, it was unbelievable. Like we get cold and snow and ice here, but like when people complain, I'm like, go live in Cleveland. Go live in Cleveland one winter and then come back and tell me.
Let's see where you're at. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
The frame of reference you have forever. You're like, this is nothing.
Right.
2 inches of snow. Right. This is nothing. Try the lake effect in Cleveland when freaking it's like we just got 2 feet for no reason. Like what the hell?
Right. Yeah, for no reason.
So true. Oh, so when you were in Cleveland, obviously in 2010 you got traded to the Yankees, which was, I think, all of us, bro. I think I always tell, I played for Boston in 2008, and I always say, I think as a big league player, everyone should get the chance to play in either Boston or New York as a Yankee. What was your time like in New York? Like what do you remember about that few months you were there?
Man, it was, you know, I was never a big New York guy. Like I, you know, 2 or 3 days in New York was fine. It was enough for me. So,
right.
But then when I got traded there, man, like you get a whole new appreciation for the city and for the organization where it's as professional as it can be. Everything's top notch, but like, everything, the emphasis is winning. Like, right. That's what everything is about. And it was pretty businesslike where not many dudes rolling into the park like at 1 or 1:30. Like, dudes are getting there 2:30, 3 o'clock, get their work in, and hit the field. Like, it's not a lot of, you know, downtime goofing around. Like, it was businesslike. And my first day there, I was with Cleveland, and we were in Toronto. And so I flew from Toronto to Tampa because that's where they were playing when I got traded there. And I thought one of the cooler things, like, you know, you could probably take it for granted, but like my first day there, Girardi comes up to me and the first thing he says, he's like, hey, do you have kids, you know, family? And I said, yeah, you know, married, got at the time had 2 kids. He's like, hey, if there's ever something, you know, an emergency, anything happens, he goes, you go to your family. You're like, wow. You don't have to call me. You don't have to tell anybody. Like, you know, you go take care of your family. Do what you have to do. Like, you know, that was the first thing he ever said to me. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That's really cool. That's really cool. Yeah. Joe's great. You know, I hope he gets another job somewhere. I mean, he did so well in New York. You know, Philly was a little tough, but just a great guy. And that says a ton. What about, you played with both A-Rod and Jeter. Can you just, mm-hmm. I mean, for our fans that are listening, like, obviously we don't all get a chance to play with A-Rod Jeter. What mm-hmm. was that like? What was A-Rod like? What was Jeter like? Was the mystique around Jeter, was that real? Could you feel it being there for the Yankees?
Yeah, I think so. Just from an outsider, I'm sure guys that had played with him for a while, you know, it was different. But like for me, it was, you know, everything that you saw, you know, about the Yankees. But the biggest thing I remember with Derek, it was just everything was just so simple. Like everything was simplified and like, hey, like we're here to win a baseball game today. Like it never got bigger than what it should be. And, right. And I think that was the biggest thing. I mean, there was a couple meetings, you know, team meetings when I was there, and a lot of guys would say stuff, and then he would say something towards the end, but it would be just the simple, you know, the simplest thing, but it made the most sense, right? Everybody's right. trying to talk and, you know, say the right thing and whatever, and then he'd give you one line, and that would be it. And it was like, oh yeah, that's right. He's right. So,
oh, that so, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, it was, you know, just keep the negativity out, you know, like, stay, you know, stay out of the papers, you know, you don't need to be reading, you know, whatever, all that stuff. It's like, hey, yeah. just come to help us win a ball game.
Yeah. What about CeCe? I mean, he was pretty much a workhorse then, you know, what was he like?
So I first met CeCe when I was 17, we were at a showcase together and like, and so me and him actually ended up in the home run derby together.
Oh, no way.
And so CeCe hits bombs, dude. And so, so we kind of hit it off. We kind of had the same personality. He's pretty laid back. I'm pretty laid back. And so I'd met him then. And then, you know, when he was with Cleveland, you know, got to, you know, catch up with him and, you know, when we were in Cincinnati, but CeCe's like, I mean, one of the just ultimate teammates. Just competitor. I mean, heck, what the clip that goes around where what did he do? He had like a $500,000 bonus he could have got.
Yeah, and he drilled that guy. Yeah,
he drilled the dude because they hit somebody else. Right. So, but just the ultimate, you know, one of the ultimate teammates where it was just extremely competitive and just get out of the way because he's coming. And he could hit. That's what, like, even even when we would play them when he was in Cleveland, like, I was like, man, at least we'll get to see CeCe hit today. Like, when they would come to Cincinnati, like, he's not very fun to face, but, man, CeCe could hit.
Yeah, well, it looks like his son, too, can hit, too. I think he's going to be getting drafted here soon at some point. But I know we look back at CeCe in high school. Like you said, he could rake. And then I think they were trying to figure out, is he a hitter or a pitcher? And then they're like, he throws 98, 99 for the left side. I think we should be a pitcher.
Yeah, he's 6'7 and throws 98. We might want to keep him on the mound for a little bit.
That's so true, dude. Oh, my God, so true. And then you fast forward, Kearnsy. After in New York, you know, you played some really cool places. You finish it up for yourself in Florida. But with the Marlins, man, I remember we got together one time when you came into Pittsburgh. We got together for lunch, and I remember asking about Stanton because you had some. There were some big boys there that weren't yet. There weren't yet big boys, you know. Tell us about what was it like playing with Stanton back in that day in 2013, 12 and 13 with the Marlins.
So Giancarlo, man, like just obviously a physical freak, but I was always most impressed with his work ethic. Like he was a really good right fielder, and he would go out there every day in BP, and he would, like, no pitchers could be around, no nothing. And he would power shag in right field. Wow. And like just really working to get better. And like, as for all the 500-foot homers and whatever he does, like that was always stood out to me more than anything. Is like he goes out there during BP and works at it to get better in the outfield. Right. When, you know, you see guys take that for granted or whatever it may be, but, and just a really good dude and hard worker, humble. You know, we had a pretty veteran team down there, and there was a lot of high expectations that first year, and we didn't play that well. And so there were some team meetings and stuff, and you know, some of the older guys are saying things and whatever, but I went up to Giancarlo one time. I was like, hey man, I was like, don't be afraid to speak up in these meetings, because everybody in here, even though, you know, we're older, people respect you, and you're the guy that's going to be here longer than anybody. Like your and your voice is gonna carry weight where you go, you know, you if you do things the right way and go about your business the right way, when you speak up, people are gonna listen. So
right.
So that was he was just a really good dude, man, and just really easy to cheer for and I mean, I was always scared to death he's going to hurt somebody. Like one of these line drives that come off his bat, man. Like he, other than the ball Sheffield hit that almost killed Dunner, like we were playing the Mets and they were in no doubles.
And oh God!
He hit the same thing. It was like a line drive that you felt like the shortstop dove for. And like this ball gets to the wall and, you know, no doubles, like you're almost on the warning track, usually in the outfield.
Right.
And it was like that. How in the world? Like it looked like a single to left and this ball got all the way to the wall and they're in the no doubles defense. And I'm just like, golly, this dude hits the ball harder than anybody I've ever seen. And I mean, that's you go back playing with Dunner and Willie Moe and all those guys like it's just another level with Stanton.
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, that must have been fun too, because that's when he was like, you know, just coming up. He was like, you know, and you know, full fledged, no injuries yet, just could absolutely hammer a baseball. On that team, though, there were so many special players, and you know, one of them, you know, rest in peace, Jose Fernandez, was you know, became one of the best pitchers in the game, if not the best at the time, and was, you know, off what people thought was going to be a Hall of Fame career, and, you know, passed away in that boating accident a few years ago, which was awful. But what was it? What was Jose Fernandez like? I mean, and you saw him too, pretty much. Well, he had a great rookie year that year.
He was fearless. But you know, fearless, and it's a little easier to be fearless when you got that kind of stuff.
Right.
But he you know, just fastball, slider, changeup, throw them all for strikes anytime you want. It's kind of funny. Like I was only there for about half the season, but I remember he was making his big league debut in New York against the Mets. And like, so some people are asking him like, are you nervous or whatever? And Jose just laughs at him. He's like, nervous. He's like, dude, I've been in jail. I've been on a boat trying to get from Cuba to the U.S. I've had to jump overboard and rescue. It was his mom or grandma one time.
His mom.
Yeah, he'd been in jail two or three times trying to get to the U.S. He's like, I'm not scared of the Mets. I can promise you that.
I was like, yeah, oh, wow. They talk about a perspective thing. Yeah, that's a perspective thing. Yeah. No, I'm going to go on the bump in a big league game. No, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah.
And that's, and also too, guys that were coming up then too, wasn't Yelich coming up and Ozuna and Real Muto? Did you ever get a chance to see them play, or were they just like the Kearns and Dunn when I was coming up, you know?
So in 2012, I went on a rehab assignment to Jupiter, and all three of those guys were on the single A team in Jupiter. And so that was just, I mean, you know, they stand out in a single A game, obviously, and you kind of heard about them, but all good dudes. And so then they were in spring training the next year, and Yelich probably hit, I mean, it seemed like he hit 500 and was hitting a home run every other day.
Yeah.
But he still started in the minor leagues that year. And then, let's see, Ozuna was in spring training. And since me and him had to share a helmet because we had the Grande Cabezas. So like, I think I had when he would come, I had the only helmet that would fit him. So I got to know Zuna, Marcel a little better than others because we shared a helmet.
That's so great, dude. Oh my God. That's so great. So Kersey, for you now, man, you've been out of the game a while, you know, Aubrey's 16, Brady's 15, Cooper's 10, you know, as a dad, I know you're really involved in coaching the kids and just being a great dad, you know, as you are, you and Abby, raising those kids, you know, what are some of the biggest things you tell your kids now, you know, coaching them or just, you know, being around them every day? Give us some good, you know, dad advice.
Well, you know, with the older one, he's 16 and I help with his travel team. And so, you know how crazy the travel world is now. And, you know, with young kids getting offers and rankings and just all this stuff. So it's, you know, our summer season just ended with them last week. And that was kind of the message that I shared with them was like, don't let who's on the other side of the fence, whether it's a recruiter or a scout or whatever, don't let that like take your joy away from this game. Like, it's kind of what we talked about earlier. Like, you started playing this game because it was fun and you're playing with your buddies. And so it's kind of that, like, don't take that joy away and like, just play for the respect of your teammates. Like, you know, that's what, you know, at the end of the day, like, I think that's what meant more to most of us, was like, you wanted the respect of your teammates, that they knew you were going to bring it every day.
Right.
And so that, and also like the one I always share with the older kids too, is like, man, if I'm a coach or a scout, like when I come watch you, like I want to see you struggle. I want to see how you deal with some adversity. Just to see how you act, you know, do you pout? Are you a guy that runs away from a challenge? You know, whatever it may be. So, and then with the 10-year-olds, man, <it's> just, yeah, golly. I mean, they're great kids, but you never know what they could be talking about, you know, the furthest thing away from baseball. It doesn't matter. You're just trying to keep it fun, teach them the fundamentals and just hopefully they develop a love for the game.
They love it. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Hang on 1 second. I got to take a piss so bad, Chich. Hang on 1 second.
No problem.
Okay.
This isn't great, man.
It's that old man bladder.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, so, dude, it was the very first, like, big job I got at ESPN when they would allow you to do a spring training thing. And Eisen was there. I was in Bristol at the time. But from that minute forward, I followed you and Donner's career for, like, you were like my favorite players, because I was like,
that's crazy.
It's like I broke in with you guys.
That's wild, man.
Yeah.
So how long have y'all been doing this podcast?
We are just about up to our 100th episode next week. We've been doing it for like a year and like 3 months now. It's pretty crazy. Like,
oh wow.
We both were like, I worked at MLB Network for so many years with Sean was in my wedding party. Like, we've been close since we worked together, and I left MLB Network and he was like, hey, now that you're a free man, you want to give this a shot? We were like, yeah. And we started, if you look back at like the first like five or six, it's like watching like the first episode of Seinfeld, where you're like, wait, was that how did that show make it, dude? Like, everything
right.
We were a mess. We changed microphones and stuff, but it's been cool ever since, man. We have a great time with it. And you know, him living in Pittsburgh and me here, it's almost like we get to see each other every day, so it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, boys.
Sorry.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Kearns, we end it, you know, we'd like to end the show with a couple little games we play. We want to know, who owned you and who did you own?
Oh, gosh. Who owned me?
Like, who did you hate facing? You're like, oh, boy.
Yeah. You know who, Roy Oswalt dominated me. I got a few hits here and there, but it wasn't pretty.
Yeah.
Julian Tavares.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Julian Tavares.
Oh, God. He used to just pound sinkers and drop down. And, like, he was the guy, like, the Cardinals, they could be up 10 or down 10, and La Russa would bring them in to face me. And I'm just like, really? Like, can we get somebody else out there?
2 for 15. And, 2 for 15 against him.
And then I think like the biggest offer I had was probably like Ben Sheets. I don't think I ever got a hit off Sheets.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you're mentioning some nasty dudes. Oswalt, Sheets in his prime. Those guys were nasty.
Yeah, 0 for 13 against Sheets.
There you go.
6 Ks. Well, let's take it to the positive level, though. You have 4 home runs against one guy. Do you remember who he was?
4?
Most of anybody. Oliver Perez. Yeah.
Wow.
Got him.
Perez had some good stuff, too.
Yeah. He was nasty when he came up.
You did nasty.
Dominated Leivan Hernandez. 13 hits, 11 ribbies, 2 big flies. Who else? You first of all, the guys you faced the most were some of the nastiest pitchers. Like, you faced Smoltz a lot. You did well against Smoltz.
I think I did pretty good off him.
Yeah.
Wow.
Let's see here. John Smoltz.
I think you
were 8 for 29 with him, with a dinger. Couple doubles, a triple. Yeah, good power numbers against him. Who else? Tim Hudson. Yeah. Tim Hudson, you got a lot. Levon, you dominated. Brandon Webb, 9 for 21. Yeah. Case, when he was a stud back then.
Oh yeah, when Webb was winning Cy Youngs.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's kind of personal. That's a Kentucky guy, so like you're able to lock it in. Yeah. You're able to lock it in a little more.
I love it.
You got Maddox. Oh, got Maddox once too. 7 for 29. Nice.
Oh, that's great. So, Kernsy, the last thing we do is we do this thing called 9 and 90. Chinch will ask 9 questions. These are just, like, pretty dumb and fun questions, but Chinch will ask me 9. He'll ask me a question, and then you go after me.
Hall of Fame baseball broadcaster Marty Brenneman here. It's time for 9 and 90, the most ridiculous segment in all of sports.
All right, okay.
All right, Chinch.
First one, Case, body wash for men, yay or nay?
I'm more of just a soap guy. I just want to take the soap, get in and out as quick as I can.
Okay.
I'm a body wash guy, man. Like, I don't know if it's just getting older, but, like, man, I smell worse now than ever.
I love it.
All right, Case, get the next generation cell phone as soon as it comes out, or wear yours out until it's dead.
No, I get so much crap for this. I wear it out till I'm dead. And like the kids will be like, "Dad, your phone, you gotta get a new phone." Like the other day, my son hit a rocket off. Jake hit me a rocket off my phone and cracked into a million pieces. And I had it for like 6 months. And I was like, "When are you gonna get a new phone?" I was like, "I just don't care. I just don't want a new phone. I don't care."
I'm with you on that one. I'm definitely with you. Yeah, it's just not at the top of my list. Like same way. Like my volume, you can barely hear anything, and my kids are like, "You need a new phone." I'm like, "No, this one,
this one's fine."
Yeah. Yes, unless this thing snaps in two, I'm not getting a new one.
Love it, bro.
When traveling a long distance, your favorite mode of transportation: plane, train, automobile, or boat?
Plane, definitely. I want to get there quick.
Yeah. Oh, you can't.
Yeah, plane. Plane, especially when you got kids.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly.
Right. There you go. Oh, here's a tough one. What would be worse, clogging a toilet on your first date with a girl or puking at the restaurant with your first date on a girl?
Oh my God. I got to go off track here for 1 second because my buddy in high school, I'm not going to name his name because I don't know if he wants this out there. My buddy in high school goes over to his girlfriend's house on a date. And he's like, must have had like a bad burger or something for dinner. So he's like, "Hey, I just got to go to the bathroom real quick." So he gets in the bathroom, just drops a quick bomb. Then he realizes there's no toilet paper. So he's like, "What am I going to do?" You know, and no, the toilet wouldn't flush. That's what it was. The toilet
this
wouldn't flush.
This is Dumb and Dumber.
No, this is Dumb and Dumber. This is literally Dumb and Dumber. It's like, "I'm shaving in here." You know? So the toilet wouldn't flush. So he's like, he goes, "I didn't know what to do." He goes, "This girl was so hot. I just met her, just started dating her." He goes, "So I did what anyone else would do. I reached in, grabbed the poop, put it in my pocket, walked out and said, 'Hey, I got to get going. I'll see you later.'" See you later. True story. Says he gets out by his car, he throws it in the yard. I go, "What'd you do with the poop?" He's like, "Threw it in the yard, got in my car, drove home."
Oh my gosh.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
Oh, Pittsburgh's finest.
You don't even have to answer that one. Leave it to that. All right, here we go, Sean. How many 12-year-olds would it take you to beat you in a fight?
12-year-olds?
Yeah.
Where are they from? Youngstown? If they're from Youngstown, they'd have to. I'd say there has to be at least 8 of them.
How about you?
8 12-year-olds. I'm going to be throwing some haymakers at these kids.
What do you got, Kurt?
I'm going to need at least double digits because pride takes over at some point. Like, I'm not letting these kids whip me.
That's good. Would you rather be hysterically funny but dumb, Sean, or a genius but extremely boring?
I'd rather be funny and dumb, I think. I mean, at least I'm having a good time and I'm laughing and whatever, you know what I mean? Like, and I see at some point in your life, you're just like, whatever anyhow. So, like, you know what I mean? So I'd rather be funny and dumb.
Yeah, it'd probably be a lot more fun to be funny and dumb, I would think.
There you go. All right, two more. Would you rather have the power to read people's minds or have the power to make yourself invisible?
Oh, make myself invisible, I think. Because then I can just don't have to be around people to read their mind.
Oh, I agree. Invisible would be great. That would be fun. Nice.
All right, I've been looking forward to this one. Adam Dunn, Sean Casey, and Austin Kearns compete against each other on American Ninja Warrior. Who finishes first, who finishes second, and who finishes third? Sean, you go first.
Oh, my God. Well, I think Dunner finishes first, Kearnsy finishes second, and I no doubt finish third. One thing I realize is, like, now that I'm getting older, I'm like, man, I don't know if I was that good of an athlete. I could just rake. You know what I mean? I can hit and bowl and play ping pong. You know, so if I did American Ninja Warrior, I'd probably blow out 17 body parts and watch Kearnsy and Dunner win it.
Case, I see you on the network, and I saw you up there in Cincinnati, like, with your Miracle League team. Like, you're pretty in shape, dude. Like, that, I'm gonna say Case goes first, and then me and Dunner might have just freaking tapped out about the first minute into it. Freaking went and got some coldies or something. But like, there's no way we finish.
Right, there we go. Dude, speaking of some cold ones before we end, I want to tell the story. Can you go back to the story of my first year out of the big leagues? Dunner and Kearnsy are on the Nationals together, and they're like, hey, Case, you want to get together for a couple pops later? I'm like, listen, I go, I can't make it. I go, it's crazy I'm going to say this, but I'm in a tennis league. And I got a tennis match tonight.
You didn't even tell us.
Oh, that's right.
You didn't even tell us. So we were at lunch.
Oh, that's right.
We were at lunch before we go to the field. We're like, Case, what are we doing later? And you're like, oh, man, I can't. I got something going on tonight. And so we're like wearing you out. You won't tell us.
I forgot it.
And so finally, like, right before we're going to the field, you kind of crack and you're like, man, I'm playing in this tennis league, and, you know, co-ed tennis league with my wife, and we've got a match tonight. And we're like, you got to be freaking kidding me. And so we're like, where the heck do you play tennis? And so that's probably what your biggest fault is. You told us where you play. So we were like, yeah, dude, whatever. We'll just see you tomorrow, you know. So as soon as we get to the field, we go to our video guy. We're like, hey, man, we need a camera. And he's like, what for? Like, we need a camera. We'll bring it back tomorrow. I promise you, nothing will happen to it. We will bring it back tomorrow. So we played. We go back to the hotel. We call it, get a cab at the hotel. We stop. We get like a case of beer, a cooler, and we have our video camera, and we have them drop us off. I don't even remember the name of the place.
Yeah, the Mount Lebanon tennis courts.
There you go. So, like, we're like kind of hiding over like a little hill, like watching. And so his match begins, and he didn't even know we were there. We got it recording on video, and we're pulling a cooler at the same time. And then finally, I think we start making some comments and stuff, and he looked over and figured out we were there. But man,
I think they played it on the network.
I was doing a show. Casey's like,
yeah, Chinch played it on the network. Dan Plesek said, I looked like I was playing tennis underwater. Is what he said. It looks like you're playing underwater. And I remember, Kearnsy, I'm there, I'm hitting the ball, and you guys are like, you suck, Casey. And I'm like, who's taunting me? I turn up. It's you and Dunner with a cooler, a video camera. I mean, you might add some tunes, some country music going or something. Like, these guys are unbelievable. They came all the way to my tennis match with a freaking cooler. Only Dunner and Kearnsy would pull that off. Oh, my God, dude. So great. So freaking great, man. Kearnsy, has been awesome catching up with you, man. Please tell Abby and the kids I said hello. And, dude, this has been a lot of fun going down memory lane and, you know, just being able to look back at your career, brother.
No, I enjoyed it, man. Happy to do it. Good to get some laughs and catch up, man. But I appreciate it. Tell everybody we said hello, too.
All right, brother. I will, man. Thanks, Kearnsy.
All right, bud. See you, Case.
dude. Awesome, man.
Yeah, man.
Awesome stuff.
You say it all the time about like those guys. You always talk about Dunner and Kearns, and like it's so obvious as to why. What a genuinely, amazingly cool human being, and so nice and huge. Well,
you know why? How he was raised by just two great parents, and you know, there was a toughness, always a toughness about Kearns that I loved. And you know, just getting a chance to catch up with him right there, I was just so grateful for that. But yeah, man. One of my favorite teammates of all time. Yeah. Almost felt like a little brother to me, really, because he was, you know, he's about 5 years younger than me.
Yeah.
And just loved it. Yeah, Dunner and Kearns, they're always kind of, you know, in their history together. Like, at least for me, you know, in my experience, because they came up together, they were the best of friends, and they did everything together. So just really cool catching up with him. Love Kearns. You haven't talked to him in a while. And like I said, he's got three great kids, great wife, and just good people. Good old country, Lex Vegas. Come on down here to Lex Vegas.
Lex Vegas, that's great. Oh, another great one, man. I love being on this ride with you and meeting all your great friends, man. And he's certainly at the top of that list, man.
He's the best, dude. He's the best. And Chinchy, love it, man. Yeah. Everybody out there, keep downloading, subscribing to us, and you know, find us on wherever, Spotify app, wherever you find your podcasts, and also our YouTube channel if you want to see it visually, which is a lot of fun. So, all right, brother. I love you, Chinch. I will see you soon, my man. Just up a little catfish dinner. Gonna sound like a winner when I lay you down and love you right. Yeah, that's my kind of night.